President Trump is moving at lightning speed.
Billions of dollars in waste, fraud, and abuse.
Executive orders, new policies, promises kept. It's hard to keep up. Until now. Subscribe to the Trump Report. This email brings you daily highlights from the Oval Office right to your inbox 5 days a week.
The golden age of America begins right now.
It'll help you follow President Trump at the speed of Trump.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. So very happy to have you with us today, wherever you might be across this great nation. We've got a lot of stuff happening today. Of course, the government shutdown is looming. We're going to get to more of that. And by the way, the Democrats, you know, they're all about, we can't shut down the government. We can't shut down the government. Well, they're about to shut down the government. And understand this, this will be Schumer's shutdown. And we shall be reminding you of that every day of the shutdown. But the Democrats actually believe this is the way to get Trump. It reminds me again of the great Roadrunner cartoon where President Donald J. Trump is the Roadrunner and the Democrats are Wile E. Coyote. And every time the Democrats think they've got Donald Trump cornered, they think they're finally going to be able to destroy, to consume Donald Trump. Guess what happens? The giant Acme anvil falls on the Democrats every single time. We're going to get to more of that. Also, Dave Brandt's going to be here to help us through the tariffs and what is about to happen to your bank accounts. Because, again, and we've been trying to prepare the audience here for what's about to happen, that things are going to get a little bumpy. But that's okay because the road is going to smooth out and you're going to be just fine. But Dave Brandt, the Senior VP of Business Relations at Liberty, is going to be joining us. Also, Mary Margaret Olihan from the Daily Wire is going to be here. She's a White House correspondent. And we have another crazy story about conservative kids coming under attack on the university campus. Travis Barham from the Alliance Defending Freedom will be here. But I want to start out with a story that just really has me bothered. And I don't know why this has me bothered, but it's got me bothered. So there are a couple of big stories out there saying that the Southern accent is fading away. And one of the things that I love about America is the diversity of our people. And I know that people, let me backtrack. And I can't wait to hear Ben Dieter's take on this because he's a Yankee. And maybe for Yankees, it's not a big deal. But for the South, we're an identity, you know, our identity is rooted in our Southern hospitality, our music, our food, our accent. It's just our way of life. You know, things are just different below the Mason-Dixon line. And by the way, things are different in the Midwest. And I love the regional accents. When I remember when I was in college, I did a lot of traveling all over the country. And we'd go to Maine, and you folks in Maine, you've got a great accent. I know there's Ray Richards is like, what accent? What are you talking about, Starnes? But you guys have this distinct accent. The people in Boston have a great accent. New Jersey, you guys. Then there's Minnesota. I love that kind of stuff. California, you guys are kind of, you know, vanilla. Sorry, California. But every region has a very distinctness about it. And I'll give California this. They've got great In-N-Out burgers over there. All right, no doubt about that. And my concern here is that now In-N-Out is coming to, of all places, Tennessee. Well, you know what? One of the reasons I enjoyed traveling to California was to stop and get an In-N-Out burger. And it's like now, you know, here in Memphis, for example, we have Gus's Fried Chicken. Well, now Gus's is going to be franchising all over the place. Why can't we just keep everything, you know, in its place? Maybe, am I getting old? I don't think I am. But maybe that's it. I don't know. So anyway, there are a couple of stories out there talking about the Southern accent is disappearing. And I don't want that to happen. I love the Southern accent. There's something, you know, when I hear somebody dropping their G's and they're holding onto their vowels a little bit longer than they should, I love that. I love that. And by the way, we do it because we love to savor those vowels down in Dixie. That's why we do that. Anyway, Southern Living has a piece of, and by the way, Southern Living is not a Southern magazine. I don't know what the heck happened there. But anyway, Southern Living says, noticing that younger generations don't sound so Southern anymore, well, it's not your imagination. This is according to a new study out of the state of Georgia. Researchers have concluded that Peach State residents are talking differently now, or at least millennials and Generation Z kids do. Younger folks haven't picked up the Southern twang, evidenced by the fact that they pronounce words like dress and face with one vowel instead of two. Linguists call that drawn-out pronunciation a diphthong, or gliding vowels, in case y'all are wondering. You know, we got a lot of diphthongs in Dixie. I love that. Nothing wrong with that. But have you noticed that people are just no longer talking with an accent? And it may just be a uniquely Southern thing. I don't know. Maybe you folks in Maine and the Northeast and maybe in the Midwest, you guys really in the Midwest you have a sort of homogenized language. As a matter of fact, when I was studying journalism and broadcasting in college, they actually told you that you needed to have sort of like a vanilla voice, that people didn't they didn't want to hear some sort of a regional sound in your voice. And I remember years ago, when I had put out an audition tape, and there was a job opening in two cities. One was Denver, Colorado, and the other was in Sacramento, California. So anyway, I sent out my resume tapes, and one day I got a call. It was about a week later. I got a call from Denver, and the news director at this particular radio station said, "Wow, we really love your work." And I said, "Well, thank you." They said, "Your writing is remarkable, and, you know, just really flattering." And I thought, "Well, wow, all right, I guess I'm packing my bags for Denver." But there was a but coming, and the news director said, "The problem is, it's your voice." And I said, "What?" She said, "Your voice is so Southern that we just don't think that you would work in our market." She said, "People would not find you relatable. They wouldn't find you believable." And I was just devastated. And she didn't mean this in a mean way at all. She wasn't being ugly about it. She was actually trying to be helpful, because she said in her next breath, she says, "To be honest with you, I just don't know that you're ever going to be able to get a job west of the Mississippi River with that accent." And I thought, gosh. And then she said, "Well, maybe Dallas." We're having this conversation. "Well, maybe Dallas." I'm like, "Oh, I'm destined to be anchoring redneck radio. I didn't know." So she said, but she knew a linguist, somebody, a voice coach. And she recommended a voice coach so I could get the twang out of my voice. And I thought, well, good grief. And I knew at that moment, there's no way I'm doing that. I'm not getting rid of my accent. And I didn't think it was that pronounced anyway. But the following day, I got a call from Sacramento. And the news director in Sacramento went through the same spiel and said, "We want to offer you a job." And the first thing I said was, "Are you okay with my Southern accent?" And the guy says, "I love that accent." He says, "Nobody on our radio station has an accent like that." He says, "You're going to stick out. You're going to pop." That's what he said. "You're going to pop." And so I packed my bags and headed west to Sacramento, California, KFBK, where Rush Limbaugh got his start as a national talk radio host and had a wonderful time there, and then went on to Fox News. And didn't have to change a thing. And I always tell students, you know, especially in the journalism business, you got to be your authentic self. And if you're not, people aren't going to believe you. People aren't going to be able to relate to you. And if that means you've got a Yankee accent like Ben Dieter does, or if you've got a Southern accent, it doesn't matter, as long as you are your authentic self. But anyway, according to this study, so you had Southern living there, and the researchers are now saying that people, because of the internet and because of TikTok, Instagram, the social medias, that the regional vowel systems are just evaporating. And it's happening not just in the South, but also in other parts of the country. And they can't really pinpoint it other than to say that maybe a lot of it is also people moving into other, moving to the South from other regions. So there you go. According to Poplar Mechanics, yes, Poplar Mechanics actually did a story on this. The regional accent was predominantly used by white English speakers in Georgia. And it's true. You know, this was the Southern accent is really a derivative of the British accent. And over time, we just developed what I believe is one of the best accents in the world. But a lot of it has to do now with the demographic shifts of a lot of people coming from California and moving into places like Atlanta and Nashville, not so much Memphis, but even in some of the southern areas, and the accents are just, some of them I can't even understand. Over in like Northeast Tennessee, sometimes it's hard for me to understand even the southern drawls in those areas. But a lot of people say, well, Todd, you don't have that Tennessee twang. What happened? And I'll tell you what happened. So my dad got transferred down to New Orleans when I was in junior high school. And so my Tennessee twang sort of melded with that New Orleans accent. And now you got the voice that's talking to you this afternoon. And people say, did you go to school to learn how to talk like that? No, this is the voice God gave me. Didn't need any training. This is the voice that God gave me. So anyway, there you have it. I love our country. And the great thing about our country is that we've got differences out there. But now everybody's kind of, I don't know, talking the same. I think it's a communist plot, to be honest with you. All right, we're going to have a lot of fun today. We got a lot of hard news to cover as well. 901-260-5926. I am curious, though. Have you noticed that the Southern accent is disappearing? 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stearns Show. I've got to tell you about our friends over at Priority Gold. Man, are they crushing it. And they tell me you guys have been lighting up their phones, and I love that. Priority Gold, they are doing some great, great work, ladies and gentlemen. And why is that? Because they're helping diversify your savings, your retirement plans. And they offer a step-by-step roadmap to do that with their free wealth preservation guide. And they want to give that to you free of charge, no strings attached. Again, there's no cost, no obligation, and it's available for instant delivery. It is super simple. Text Todd, T-O-D-D, to 24999, or you can visit PriorityGold.com to get your free guide today. Text Todd to 24999, and you're going to get your free wealth preservation guide, a step-by-step roadmap to fortifying your savings with gold during what is, I mean, quite frankly, an historic bull run. Just unbelievable. And welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show, everybody. Happy to have you with us. 901-260-5926, our number. That's 901-260-5926. All right. This is interesting. Brooke Rollins, who is heading up the Agriculture Department now, our Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, weighing in, they made a fascinating discovery about the USDA and what you are funding. This is, again, USAID, what they are funding with your tax dollars. Cut number two.
Until today, USDA was funding a $397,000 grant in the San Francisco Bay Area to educate queer, trans, and BIPOC urban farmers and consumers about food justice and values-aligned markets. By stopping this wasteful spending here at USDA, we are ending identity politics and we are refocusing our agency on its core mission of supporting American farming, ranching, and forestry.
So again, why are we spending this much money on queer farmers? And I don't understand that. And we need to get a clear understanding of exactly what's going on here. And I have a theory. And my theory is quite frankly very shocking, because I'm contending that we have had tens of billions of our tax dollars that have basically been laundered, that they have been taking in our money, and then the Democrats for decades have been using that money, funneling that money into all of these far left organizations to literally destroy the very foundation of our country. And now the jig is up. This is why they're so enraged right now at Donald Trump and Elon Musk, because they're literally exposing all of this in real time. And if you think it's bad, now wait until they start digging into what the Department of Education has been up to. I'm telling you, folks, it is not a good situation. Not a good situation, and we got to get a handle on this. Let's go to the phones here, 901-260-5926. Jessica in Memphis, Tennessee, listening to us on KWAM. Jessica, I understand you have a great accent story.
I do. Back in the 80s, the movie The Client was filmed at my house. It was a really neat experience. They emptied our house, moved us out, and it was great. Hollywood was really terrific. But anyway, when it was over, I had this man come over to me, and he said, "Ms. Robinson, would you," I'm not supposed to say my last name, I guess. Anyway, he said, "Could I talk to you a minute?" And I'm like, you know, y'all have done everything you've wanted to do to my house. What more could you want? And he said, "Would you mind talking to this gentleman? He's a linguist, and he wants to interview you." And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of a cool thing. And the whole deal was, he was from another part of the country, and he was fascinated by the Southern accent. So he, you know, we talked. I'm going to say he interviewed me, but what I said was, "Well, now, what do you want to know?" And he goes, "Well, I just want to hear you talk, and I've never had any trouble talking." So we just talked, and he said, "You know, what do you want to talk about?" And I said, "Well, what do you want to talk about?" And he said, "Well, we can talk about anything you want to talk about." So anyway, that's my story, and I don't know what they ever did with it, or if they thought, I don't think I have that great a Southern accent, but I hate to think we're losing it, because I'm born and raised here, and I like my accent.
You know, I go back and watch movies like The Firm, and I just watched that a couple of weeks ago. It popped up on the screen, and I thought, you know, I need to watch that again. And you go back and you look at how beautiful, you know, Memphis really is when you take away all the gunfire and the crime and the violence and you put a nice little soundtrack. We've got a pretty, pretty awesome little city here.
We do. Have you seen The Client?
I have seen The Client, yes.
Well, that was the movie that my house, everybody thinks, you were that house in over on Tuckahoe. And I'm like, nope, we were a midtown house that, we were the Mama Love House, and it was a great experience.
In The Client, I'm going to have to go home. I'm going to watch that tonight, Jessica, and I'm going to have to check out your house.
Okay.
All right.
I wish it still looked like it did. It was white, and unfortunately, we thought it was smart to paint it, and I wish we hadn't. But Hollywood loved the 12.5-foot ceilings and the fact that it was a white cottage. I mean, they just loved it.
Well, I'll be...
What a neat experience.
May I just tell you, Jessica, you have not lost your accent, and you have a lovely Southern accent.
Thank you. Hey, listen, I love to listen to you. With everything that was going on, I love that you're talking about something a bit lighthearted. But,
well, we've got to, Jessica. We're going to be in a big fight, I think, tomorrow into next week with the government shutdown. So we got to have a little bit of levity today.
I agree. Listen, you do a great job. You have a good day.
Jessica, thank you so much, and thanks for calling in. Wow, what a great call, and what a great accent, too. All right, 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. 260-5926. By the way, head over to ToddStearns.com. We are raising money for our friends at Food for the Poor. Click on that blue banner. We're going to be reading out a name, a number of names of folks that have already donated. That's coming up again. ToddStearns.com. Click on that blue banner at the top of the page. We'll be right back, America. A generation of children in El Salvador are lost to malnutrition, and the only way to a better future is through a school feeding program. Join me, Todd Stearns, in saving lives with Food for the Poor. When you click the Feed Their Future banner at ToddStearns.com, your gift of $100 will provide a child in El Salvador with daily school nutrition for a year. Call 855-353-4673 and make your most generous gift. The nutrition these children get in school is often their only meal of the day. Food for the Poor's school nutrition program effectively addresses malnutrition and increases children's school attendance. Your donation will also support local farmers who produce the nutritional supplements that are needed to improve children's nutrition in El Salvador. Your gift will allow them to focus on learning rather than worrying about their next meal. Today, you have the power to feed a child or an entire classroom for a year. Click the blue banner at ToddStearns.com or call 855-353-4673 with a gift of $100 to feed their future. All right, you know who has the best Southern accent, and there are two guys, and they're both from Mississippi. One of them, do you guys remember this? It's called the Lake. Do y'all remember Jerry Clower? Oh, I love Jerry Clower. Marcel Ledbetter. Do any of you remember Jerry Clower? I'm not sure too many of our listeners around the country might remember that name. One of the greatest Southern comedians of all time. Good man. And it was good, clean, fun humor, too. But the other is Haley Barbour, who was the former governor of Mississippi. And I'll never forget, one year we were at Fox covering the RNC. We're in Tampa, Florida, at Fox Base Camp. And I was interviewing the Oak Ridge Boys. They were going to be singing the national anthem. And I thought it would be fun for the fellas to sing Amazing Grace a cappella, but they wanted some good acoustics. And so we all agreed that the best place to do that was the men's bathroom there at the Fox Base Camp. So I walked in there, me and the Oak Ridge Boys, we walk into the men's room and nobody was in there. We didn't think. And so I'm in the middle holding my little microphone, and the Oak Ridge Boys are circling me and they're singing Amazing Grace, and it was fantastic. I mean, we had Jesus goosebumps, right? Jesus bumps, as we call them. It was pretty awesome. As soon as we finished, and I've got this audio somewhere, as soon as we finished, there was a flush in one of the stalls, and out comes Haley Barbour himself, and he looks at us, and we look at him, and he said, "Wow, that's a mighty good singing there, boys. Mighty good singing, boys." I got to find that audio. Let's go to Gainesville, Georgia. Jim listening to us on WDUN. Hi, Jim. What's going on?
Oh, nothing much. It's Ken, by the way. Sorry.
Ken, I am terribly sorry.
That's okay. I was just wondering if you've ever heard Rick Bragg's theory on the Southern accent and the letter R.
I have not. Well, I'm anxious to hear this theory.
Okay, well, his theory was that rich Southerners omit the letter R, and poor Southerners add the letter R. Roy Barnes used to have a commercial when he was running for governor, and he said, "I'd be proud to be your governor." And poor Southerners add the letter R. They do the wash, and they want a glass of water. A funny example is when my grandmother died, my mother found her actual birth certificate, and her name is Marcia, but my granny pronounced her name as Marcia, and they actually wrote Marcia on the birth certificate.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Well, you know, Jimmy Carter, had a pretty good accent, but his was almost very, he gritted his teeth a lot. It was like, well, I just, Jimmy Carter, yeah. Yeah.
He omitted the letter R when he spoke.
I don't mean to disparage Driving Miss Daisy fans, but one of the worst Southern accents of all time was Dan Aykroyd. That it really wasn't even an accent. He was come here, yup, come here.
Yeah.
Ken, appreciate the call. This is a great. Well, thank you for educating us here. So it's a rich versus poor theory. I had no idea. I've never heard that before, but. Good intel. Let's go to Pastor Bob in Beaufort, North Carolina, listening to us on the Talk Station. Hi, Pastor Bob.
How are you doing today?
Good, good, good.
I have a funny accent story. I was at the local grocery store at the deli department, and the little girl that was waiting on me, she had a Southern accent that was so far south, one more step and she went off into the ocean. And here's a lady from New York that came there, and she had a New York accent so far northwest, one more step, and she'd be in the water. And they were talking to each other in English, and neither one of them knew what the other one was saying. Well, since I was born in Washington, D.C., I became the interpreter. I could not believe it.
Bob, it's never good when the Southern guy has to be the interpreter. But I'm sorry, where did you say you grew up, though? Where were you from? What was the name of that? The nation's capital city you just said?
Yeah, Washington, D.C.
I love
Washington,
it. There's that R. I love it. All right. Well, Pastor Bob, sometimes we just have to have a good laugh on the radio.
Oh, here's one more thing. I went to a Washington for Jesus rally that Demas Kacharian put on. And they had people, they had signs when you came there for every state. And it was between the Washington Monument and the Capitol. And then they had the people march in a parade. And I stood there in the greeting people as they passed by, and going from North Carolina to North Dakota, or going from Alaska to something else, every 3 minutes you had a different accent. That was the most interesting thing I was ever involved in.
I'm always fascinated. Pastor Bob, I'm always fascinated by other cultures. I love it, and that's why I don't want anything to get watered down. I want to go to Minnesota, and I want to feel like I'm in Minnesota. You know what I mean? I want to go to Wisconsin. Somebody better be serving me some cheese somewhere. That's what I'm talking about, and some bratwurst. All right, Pastor Bob, got to run. Thank you for that call. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stearns Show. Folks, we have some exciting news about MyPillow. They're having their first ever mega sale. Oh, that was... We needed some sound effects.
Where did that come from?
Mega sale. MyPillow having their first ever mega sale on overstock clearance and brand new products. For example, Ben Dieter, you're going to need these. You need 50%. You're going to save over 50% on flannel sheets. Queen size bed only $59.98. King size sheets $69.98. And they sell out fast every year. So you gotta get an order that right now. You can also save 30% on their brand new My Crosses. They're designed in the likeness of the one that Mike Lindell has worn every day for over 20 years. They come in men's and women's styles, and they're made right here in the USA. Get the 2025 six-piece My Towel set for only $29.98. Their quantities are extremely low, so you're going to want to get them now before they go. And I can't forget to mention the best-selling standard MyPillow. I have six of them. I like a lot of pillows. $14.98. That is a huge deal. So take advantage of the first-ever mega sale. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code STARNS, or call 800-839-8506. That's 1-800-839-8506. But wait, there's more. Remember that $75 free shipping rule, Ben Dieter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that ship has sailed, baby. The train has left the station. Because right now, for a limited time, every order at MyPillow ships for free. MyPillow.com, promo code STARNS, or call 800-839-8506. just got a message from Paul Shanklin. Paul, of course, used to work with Rush Limbaugh's show, and now we're honored that he's hanging out with us. Paul says, you know, Starnes, Johnny Donovan once asked me why we talk so slow in the South. I told him it was because we think when we talk. Otherwise, we'd sound just like New Yorkers. You got to love it. All right, welcome back to the Todd Starnes Radio Show, 901-260-5926. I want to take us back to yesterday, day before yesterday. Something very interesting happened on Capitol Hill. There was a subcommittee meeting that was being chaired by Congressman Keith Self, the great Republican from Texas, and that transgender member of Congress, McBride, was trying to speak. I want you to listen to what went down.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ranking Member Keating, also wonderful.
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat your introduction again, please?
Yes, we have set the standard on the floor of the House, and I'm simply...
What is that standard, Mr. Chairman? Would you repeat what you just said when you introduced a duly elected representative from the United States of America, please?
I will. The representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Mr. Chairman, you are out of order. Mr. Chairman, have you no decency? I've come to know you a little bit, but this is not decent.
We will continue this.
You will not continue it with me unless you introduce a duly elected representative the right way.
Oh, wow. All right. Wow. Got a little heated there. I want to go to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Congressman Keith Self joins us. Congressman, good to have you with us today.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thank you.
I have to tell you, I've got to commend you, Congressman. You kept your cool through all of that. Was that a difficult thing to do with that guy hollering at you?
Absolutely not, Todd. I'm a retired Green Beret, and I'm not even sure what the fuss is about. I told other people, what is this all about? He's a man. And that's the standard way we introduce members of Congress in committees on the floor of the House.
No, I mean, it's a fair point. I mean, if you really wanted to get technical, your Congressman McBride, Mr. McBride, actually misgendered you by calling you Madam Chairman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the irony of it all. I'm speaking truth. He is not. Who did the ranking member explode on? The Republican telling the truth, not the Democrat who's not telling the truth.
And, of course, the guy that was yelling, that was Democrat Congressman Bill Keating calling you out for allegedly misgendering Mr. Sarah McBride. And again, Congressman, what I really appreciated is that, you know, you weren't insulting about anything. You were just very matter of fact. And under President Trump's executive order and under the Holy Scripture, God's only making male and female. You're one or the other.
Well, it's the most basic element of humanity, man and woman. You can cut off body parts. You can dress as you want to. It's a free country, but I don't have to participate in that fantasy. I don't have to participate in that charade because I will go with man and woman as God created them.
You know, Congressman, it's really interesting when you watch how all of this is playing out because they really expected for Kamala Harris to win and McBride would have become some sort of a superstar, kind of like the next AOC for the transgender movement on Capitol Hill. Is that working out?
Well, none of it's working out for them. It's tough for the Democrats these days. They have no message. They have no leader. The Republicans have started to hold together with this latest continuing resolution. It's going to get to Trump's desk because the Democrats in the Senate are going to have to vote for it. So, no, it's not working out for them at all, and they are really struggling.
I know you've been catching a lot of heat from the radical alphabet activists and the LGBT groups. They're calling it transphobic and anti-trans. I'm curious, what are you hearing from your constituents back home in Texas?
Well, my constituents are on both sides of the fence, but I believe that I've got the vote of the conservatives and the Republicans in CD3, and I'm getting a lot of encouraging notes and comments from them. So I you know, in any case, Todd, this is the right thing to do. We have got to start standing as a society so that we get rid of the child sacrifice that we have. I mean, castrating children as low as young as five. This is just not right. When are we going to call out this for what it is, child sacrifice in America? Just don't participate in this. We shouldn't participate in their, whatever they want to call this, transgender. Just don't participate.
No, I'm with you 1,000% there, and I really respect the position that you've taken here. There are so many young girls, especially, that are suffering. They're losing out on scholarships. They're losing out on awards and medals and these sports competitions. And time and time again, the grown-ups in the room haven't had the courage to take a stand and say, this is not right. You, on the other hand, are standing up, and you're using your position on Capitol Hill to say, you know what, this is not right. We understand right from wrong. We understand male from female, and we're going to abide by that philosophy.
Absolutely. Why do we allow a man to participate in a woman's volleyball sport and hurt girls? I mean, concussions, brain injuries. Why in the world, when did we consider that right and normal? It is not. We as a society need to take a stand that there is a difference between men and women, and what they want to do is extinguish that difference. We cannot allow them to do that. Man and woman have our individual equal roles, but different roles under God's economy. We need to celebrate that. We don't need to be destroying the difference between a man and a woman.
Congressman Keith South is on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. And Congressman, breaking news out of New York City, and I'll just describe what we're looking at. A huge mob flooded into Trump Tower over the ICE arrest of that pro-Hamas student, the one leading the campus riots. I find it very interesting. Somebody somewhere believes it's okay that we have an obligation to bring people who hate our country and want to destroy our country into our country to get educated.
Absolutely not. He is on a visa. Visas are not right. We can take it. We should. We should deport him. Visas are not citizenship. They don't hold equal rights. We ought to. This is not a freedom of speech issue. This is a, we get to choose who comes to our country. If we had known he was going to support Hamas, would we have given him a visa? Absolutely not. Take his visa, deport him, and I'm not seeing what you're seeing because I'm in an airport, but if what you're saying is true, then we need to also enforce the rule of law.
And the good news is that is happening as well, and this is the breaking news from Fox. NYPD now making arrest after a mob occupies Trump Tower. And, of course, all of this is over Mahmoud Khalil, and they're right there on Fifth Avenue calling for his release. But the guy, you're right, the guy's got to go. He's got to be deported, and that's that. And so does any other person here, foreign national, on a visa. If they hate our country and they're going to stage these illegal protests, they got to go too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more, Todd. You know, people see America. They want to come here for certain reasons. And when they get here, they want to destroy us. It makes no sense. Don't let it happen.
All right. Well, Congressman, I know you're in between airports, and we really do appreciate you taking some time to call. We were cheering along with you and saluting you, and I did that last night on the Newsmax show as well. But we really appreciate the great work you're doing up on Capitol Hill.
Thank you so much, Todd.
All right, there you go, folks. Congressman Keith Self from Texas. Now, Dieter, I understand we've got some audio here. Let's take a listen. We're going to take you to New York City, Trump Tower. Is that a band? Wow. Okay, so that's what it sounds like right now inside Trump Tower.
The acoustics are very nice.
How in the world did they get inside? Is that tower is supposed to be pretty fortified?
Well, I mean, you can walk off the street, Todd, as you know, and walk inside Trump Tower. That is open. That bottom floor, the lobby of Trump Tower, is open to tourists, but you do have to go through security to go inside. And when you have what looks like, Todd, you're looking at the images coming out of Manhattan, what, over 250 protesters wearing the same shirt. This is obviously very staged and organized. How they were able to breach past that security with large signs. Of course, noisemakers is something we're going to have to figure out and get to the bottom of.
Well, the good news here is the NYPD making the arrest, and ICE needs to be there. Any of those people who are foreign nationals, they need to be deported immediately. Don't even worry about packing your bags. We'll go. We'll take care of the packing, and we'll ship you your belongings, but you're out of here.
Do not comply. Do not comply. Well, that sounds great on a slogan and a t-shirt, Todd, but when you're looking at Tom Homan, the border czar, and telling him do not comply, I don't think you want to tell Tom Homan that. So I know he is or was yesterday in New York City. We'll see if he makes an appearance.
All right. We're going to keep you updated on this breaking news out of New York City, where several hundred protesters stormed the lobby of Trump Tower. They're all wearing the same T-shirts, and they are holding signs saying free Mahmoud, free Palestine, fight Nazis, not students. We'll keep you updated on that. Also, head over to the website. Be sure to make a donation. We're going to be reading out names of folks giving food for the poor. ToddStearns.com. Click on that blue banner, everybody.
Keep up with the Trump administration when you subscribe to the Trump Report. This email brings you daily highlights from the Oval Office right to your inbox 5 days a week. Subscribe to the Trump Report.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's right. I love this American ride.
Well, I almost had to laugh here. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. So very happy to have you with us today. Two big stories. And Dieter, I'm excited to get your take on this. So first of all, Pete Buttigieg was, no, you know, let's stop. All right, stop. I'm not going to talk about Pete Buttigieg first. We got to talk about Big Mike, Michelle Obama. We got to talk about this for a moment. So Michelle Obama launched a podcast with her brother. And have you I know you're a big podcast guy, Ben Dieter. Have you listened to the Michelle Obama podcast?
No, I'm too busy listening to this one. I haven't. Have you?
Just a smidge. And it was enough to really creep me out because you made me watch this program on HBO called, what is it? Locust?
White Lotus.
Water Locust.
White Lotus.
Oh, White Lotus. What did I say? Water Locust?
Water Locust. No.
So it's White Lotus.
Yeah.
Man, what a weird.
Oh, did you actually watch it a little bit?
I watched the whole thing.
Wow.
And I have questions. Am I sensing something between, there's something, first of all, there's like a born-again pro-Trump Christian woman on the show, which was pretty entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great storyline, but it's the family and, you know, the family from the South, from North Carolina, and it was Schwarzenegger's, is it his son, is starring, and then he's got a brother. Am I wrong to think there's something weird going on there?
No, I think you're right.
A little something, dare I say, incestuous.
Yeah.
So that may be the next. I mean, first it was calling, you know, pedophiles, renaming the what, minor attracted person. Mm-hmm. So now they're about to normalize incest on HBO. I am so disgusted. So I say,
where
that,
are you going with this,
I
Todd?
Say that because
no,
Michelle Obama,
stop while you're ahead,
is hosting a podcast with her brother. And so they had a really odd conversation during this podcast that, by the way, nobody's listening to. I think 25,000 people have actually listened to her podcast, We have many more people listen to the Todd Stern Show podcast than that. Anyway, listen to Michelle Obama and her brother talking about their childhood in Chicago's South Side.
As a result, you and me, we were physically close growing up.
Remember when we used to share a bedroom?
Of course. That was our life growing up. We shared the same room until you went to high school, right?
That's right.
Well, let's first just recall how small the apartment we lived in. You know, it seemed like it was huge, but it was essentially two bedrooms, right?
No, it was one bedroom.
Well, that little offshoot bedroom that mom and dad stayed in, that was, you would consider that a bedroom.
But that was the only bedroom. The room we were in was actually the living room. Ah. And the living room that we, what we called the living room, was actually the dining room.
Huh, okay.
Oh my God, how long is this? I'm just exhausted.
Were you sleeping together or were you not? Just cut to the chase.
That's it. I mean, what exactly do you mean by physical?
Because the brother wanted to be like, yeah, we slept together. And Michelle's like, okay, you can't do that. Barack listens to my podcast.
Does
Barack,
he?
I don't know. Has Barack released anything on the podcast?
I'm glad you asked, because I went before the show and I thought, first of all,
he's very active online.
First of all, why wasn't Barack there for the very first podcast, right?
Because it's literally me and my brother podcast. And my brother podcast.
By the way, she changed her header on the X page and it's just her and her brother now. Trump or Obama is out of the picture. Barack is out of the picture. And I'm wondering just how far Barack Obama is out of the picture, because I went and I looked at Barack Obama's Twitter feed, and you would think the man would be very proud of his wife launching this new venture and that he'd be promoting it and telling people, oh, you got to go listen. It's really cool. I didn't realize that, you know, my brother-in-law slept with my wife. They were physical. I didn't know it. No, he didn't. He hasn't said anything. Nothing at all. No promotion at all. Something is going on there.
Something is going on. And there are real rumors, Todd, that he is seeing Jennifer Aniston. So, you know, Jennifer Aniston, she's like the Hollywood actress. I mean, it's all over the New York Post. The Daily Mail have been reporting about the rift between this couple, which was made in heaven. You remember the Obamas. Everybody's like, I want, when I get married, to be like Barack and Michelle. And it turns out that Michelle is closer to her brother than she is her husband.
Clearly.
It smells of Ilhan Omar, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, gosh. That's terrible. So here's what gets me. If you think things are wild now, wait until you see what happens if Barack Obama leaves his wife for a white woman. I'm just...
Will there be a race war
there
riot
will be
in America?
Fury. There will be fury because keep in mind, Obama's mother was white and dad was black. So it was Michelle Obama who connected more with the black community, and especially black women, than Barack Obama did. I mean, and that's one of the reasons they wanted Michelle Obama to run for the White House. But I'm telling you, it was all made up. Her influence, her power, it was all made up. And we know that because of these terrible podcast downloads.
Okay, so Michelle has over 57 million Instagram followers, 22 million followers on X. She's already posted 4 videos, Todd, and she's only got 14,000 people subscribe to her show. Something isn't adding up. You look at Gavin Newsom as well. Gavin Newsom is now the new Joe Rogan. Now Michelle Obama wants to be a podcaster. People, there is no appetite for these new podcasters.
She skipped the inauguration. She skipped Jimmy Carter's funeral. Her husband is not on the very first podcast. Something is not quite right there.
The last time Barack posted something about Michelle Obama, I think was on her birthday or was for that for Valentine's Day. And Todd, let's just say the image that he shared of his wife was so unflattering. And every guy out there knows that if you post about your wife or Women Crush Wednesday, you try to post a flattering picture of your boo. He posted a photo, Todd, of his wife. She looked like she just crawled out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only post.
And I will say this. She's not very flattering to her husband. One of the podcast episodes, according to the Daily Beast, one of the episodes, Michelle talks about how she had to train Barack to get ready on time. Yeah, I'm telling you, something's not right there.
Yeah. Well, I think the other takeaway for me, because I watched a little bit of it on YouTube, because they've uploaded it there, you got to say, Michelle looks uncannily similar to her brother. Like, they are interchangeable people. Proportion-wise, she might even be a little bit bigger.
She's taller.
She is. She's got the broad shoulders. He's a little bit thinner than her, but it's just all very interesting. I'm not saying anything. I'm just going off what my eyes are telling me.
Well, it was just odd, but perhaps the worst thing of all, it was a boring podcast, and you cannot be boring in this business. And somebody should tell Michelle that. She gained a lot of her popularity based on her husband, but it turned out she wasn't all that popular after all. And you do wonder, okay, how authentic are a lot of these numbers, you know, with the social media and everything?
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to Pete Buttigieg. So Pete Buttigieg.
Does he have a podcast?
Nah, I'm not sure. But Pete Buttigieg has ruled out a run for Congress. There was talk that he was going to run for the Senate.
Yep.
But now he is not going to do that because he's got his eye on the White House, and Buttigieg is looking at maybe running for the White House in 2028. Imagine this setup here, and this could be fascinating. You could have J.D. Vance versus Pete Buttigieg, alpha male versus beta male.
Mm. Wow. So, can we all just encourage him? Can we all email Pete Buttigieg and encourage him to run? I mean, if this is the leader of the Democrat Party, Pete Buttigieg, which I guess his biggest claim to fame was he knew how to fill a good pothole. He knew how to fill those potholes in South Bend, Indiana.
And I will say that he did a pretty good job at chest feeding the newborns.
Mm.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean,
with the husband, chastity.
This is, I guess, where Democrats, or who they're left with, if, and to tie it back to the other story, though, Michelle Obama isn't launching this podcast to set herself up, or Gavin Newsom, because these two people are all over social media now. Gavin Newsom had Steve Bannon on his podcast yesterday. He's trying to make inroads with MAGA and America First. All three of these people, they say, are looking at the Oval in 2028.
If the Obamas divorced, I don't believe we've ever had a presidential couple divorce after the White House. So that could be a first.
Mm-hmm.
Something is not right there. That's all I'm going to say. I smell something, and it does not smell good, ladies and gentlemen. It does not smell good. Pew. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth sharing a blunt reality check for fat people in the military. May I just say, this needs to be a message for fat people in law enforcement, too, because there are a lot of them. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is now committed to making sure the military has the highest standards possible. This is great. He is vowing to maintain high standards, and that means getting people into shape. And Hegseth says, writing on X, our troops will be fit, not fat. Our troops will look sharp, not sloppy. We seek only quality, not quotas. Bottom line, our Department of Defense will make standards high and great again across the entire force. Oh, I like this idea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense, right? If you're going toe-to-toe with ISIS or you're going toe-to-toe with the Kremlin, you would want the fittest and the best going up against. Our troops need to be in great shape. And what we saw during the last administration with the Lloyd Austins of the world, they dropped those standards just to get as many people into the military because recruitment was so low. So they just brought down the standards across the board. And we've seen that in law enforcement, too, by the way, to increase the quota of female law enforcement, female cops. They've had to drop those standards to increase those numbers. But it goes back to safety. Do we want a safe country, or do we want ranks just for the sakes of having a full complement of officers?
David Hookstead, writing on Outkick, says, Our most elite troops hardly look like roided-out bodybuilders. Delta Force Commandos, while in elite shape, could pass for your local science teacher. And they're the deadliest men on the planet. So he's saying he's glad that this is happening, and we need to beef up and bulk up the troops. Ladies and gentlemen, what say you? How do you feel about this? 901-260-5926. No fat people in the military. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, CBS News reporting that a federal judge has just ordered the immediate reinstatement of all probationary employees who were fired at six government agencies. Look, we've got a big problem on our hands here, folks, because we've allowed the judicial system to be weaponized. And so now federal judges are basically coming in and saying, we have more power than the president of the United States. That's got to get fixed. And we've got to start impeaching a lot of these judges that think they know better than the president of the United States. We'll be monitoring that story, and we'll tell you more about that tonight on the Newsmax TV show. Let's go to the phone lines here, 901-260-5926. Should fat people be banned from the military? Danny in Selmer, Tennessee, listening to us on KWAM. Hi, Danny. What say you?
Hey, good afternoon, sir. Hey, I just want to mention on that, there's actual some practicality behind the leanness and fitness of soldiers, military personnel. And it's not a hard and fast rule because there's exceptions, so I don't want to offend anyone. But in general, lean and fit, it takes fewer calories to keep that soldier going. Logistically, it's easier to transport them. And in general, since their bodies are so efficient, their stamina is longer, and they can keep going longer on fewer hours sleep and burning up more. So logistically, it takes a lot less to support the lean, mean fighting machine guys versus the really big people. And there's a lot of other things enter into that. And, of course, that's not a hard, fast rule. So, but that's some of the insight as to why they have the military standards and why we need to adhere to them, because it makes a lot less expensive to support troops, a lot more efficient if they're fit and lean. And that's kind of the idea behind it.
I'll say this, and Danny, on a more practical note, it's a lot easier to hit somebody's that, you know, that's the size of a barn.
Well, you know, I guess the smaller guys can hide behind littler trees, I suppose.
That's true.
And dig smaller foxholes and stuff. So, yeah, good point. Yeah,
I'm coming up right behind Fat Albert. I got your back, Fat Albert.
Hey.
All right, hey, Danny. Hey, hey. All right, Danny, thanks for the call. I think that may have been rude. I shouldn't have said that.
But
it's true.
Kind of true. I was at the Target right up the road, and it's pretty late at night, and I see this. It was a criminal, because I know that, because he ran out of the Target, and quickly the police were called. I'm sitting there in the parking lot of this Target. The cops get there. The cop that jumps out of the car, I mean, he was a bigger guy. He just was. That criminal outran him. It was like cat and mouse all throughout the parking lot. And I realized right there, I mean, again, no shade to, we have the best cops in the world, truly. But you did realize right there, another example of like, you kind of have to be fitter than the criminals, or at least able to throw on some kicks, some Nike shoes, to be able to capture the bad guys.
It's a fair point. And there was a time, I think there was a time where even police officers had to go through some sort of a physical fitness training regimen. But when you look at just nationwide, there was, what was it, California, there were a couple of female cops, and they were a bit on the hefty side. They weren't morbidly obese, but they were clearly overweight, and the suspect was able to outrun them. They were able to catch up once, but the suspect was able to wiggle away, and they were, by that time, they were out of breath. And they're like, okay, whatever. We just, you know, and they were huffing and puffing. But it seems to me, and if maybe somebody in law enforcement can verify this, but it seems to me there was a time when you saw a police officer, they were not slovenly. They weren't sloppy. They were, you know, physically fit, wearing their uniforms. And if they needed to chase after a bad guy, they could do that.
Yeah. Well, you had to run to even get into a lot of these academies. You had to run a certain mile pace. You had to run a certain amount of miles, do so many push-ups, sit-ups. I remember in college, the ROTC guys, all those guys wanted to be trained. They were out there at 4 a.m. in the morning doing push-ups.
Interesting. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Seems to me you went the most physically fit police officers and military personnel. That's all. And, you know, if you're fat, you can, okay, work at the precinct answering the phones, guarding the donuts. Got to take a break. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone lines here. 901-260-5926, Memphis, Tennessee. Earl listening to us on KWAM. Hi, Earl. What's going on?
Hey, buddy. How are you doing?
Good, good. What's happening?
I just wanted to ask you to back off a little bit on your stance about these officers, and especially the younger ones. They have no training. They have no one in the field to mentor them. They're learning this job on their own.
Oh, Earl, I think you may have misunderstood what we were talking about, because we love law enforcement. I think the issue is that Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, is saying we've got to have physically fit soldiers again. And if you look out across the entire nation, not just Memphis, but the entire country, you've got a lot of people wearing uniform in law enforcement that cannot chase after suspects. They can't do the basics of their job because of their weight. And so the question is, was there a time in law enforcement where you had to have those physical, you know, those physical requirements?
Well, the answer is no. Once you get out of the academy, you're pretty much on your own.
So
I'm speaking as an officer with over 25 years on the job.
So once you get out of the academy, are there periods of time, you know, during the course of your career where you do have to meet certain requirements, physical standards? I'm also would be wondering about the fire department as well.
As far as the police department goes, no. Unless you apply for some special training or some, you know, something different. No, there's nothing outside the original academy training. So you can balloon up to 300 pounds, and well, that's just everybody's problem.
Yeah, but no, I hear, yeah, it is, Earl. I mean, that is a problem, especially if you're that weight that you are not able to chase after a suspect. And let's get real, if you are 300 pounds, you're not going to be able to catch a suspect who is, you know, much thinner and is able to run. And that was the point I was trying to make, is that Do we need those physical fitness standards applied to law enforcement as well as the military?
There would be no harm in having fitter officers. It would benefit everyone. But we're not allowed to chase people any longer. We're not allowed to pursue people on foot or on a vehicle. There's no upside. There's no benefit to it. So the people that sit in their car get fatter and fatter. Or the smarter one.
Oh, wait a second. I see where you're going with this now, Earl. So that actually makes perfect sense. I mean, and it is a good thought. I was thinking about this the other day, actually. And Ben Dieter, you know, because you live in Memphis as well, where the police, I forgot about that, the police are not allowed to do their jobs. They're not allowed to capture the bad guys. So I could understand, Earl, from that perspective. Earl, thank you for that call, and thank you for listening, but we do love the cops. And I guess if you can't do your job, you know, what are you going to do?
It's a great point, but it is interesting, Todd. like in Nashville, for example, they had a whole big recruitment thing where they just last year, they changed their fitness requirement test to an agility test, and they implemented all sorts of different things to try to get a goal of having a 30% filled complement of female officers by 2030, 2030. So just a couple of years from now. And they straight out said that they dropped a lot of their physical requirements just to maintain that. And I know in Nashville, like, there were protests over that. They're like, no, we want the best, the fittest, the most fit officers when you do have a bad guy. So that's a problem.
It is. It is. All right. 901-260-5926. Want to go to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Honored to have our good friend from Liberty University, the former congressman, the senior VP of business relations at Liberty, Dave Brandt. Dave, hope you're doing well today, sir.
I'm doing well. Another slow news day.
Well, you're very slow. We're going to start with the good news. And the good news is egg prices are dramatically falling. That is great news.
Yes. That's great news. It appears Biden quit killing the chickens.
Imagine that. If you just don't kill the chickens, you're going to get some eggs.
Don't kill the chickens, and the chickens lay eggs, and the price goes down. Because when supply goes up, price goes down. It's amazing economic theory.
Okay. Now let's get to the other news. There's a survey. There are several surveys out, and they're finding that voters right now are disapproving of President Trump's economic policies. Now, on this program, we've been telling people, hey, it's going to take some time here, and you may feel a little pain, but things are going to get better down the road. Am I giving people the wrong advice?
No, I think that's the right advice. But on the economic news, too, Peter Navarro came out and said the same thing I said a couple days ago. I was on Bannon's show, and the mainstream news media, in case people forget, back in 2020, for example, I looked up some data, and 90% of the stories were positive on Biden from CBS News, and 95% were negative against Trump. And so that's just politics, you say. But also on the economy, right, if you're driving that much negative news, and all the mainstream networks are bigger than Fox, right, if you add them together. And then if you add on MSNBC and CNN, they're still, three times Fox in the mainstream. And so my worry is that if you look at the data on the negative news and the policy, it's really not that negative. It's more negative against Trump and Elon or whatever, but against the policy is not as bad. But on trade, it's all on price. Prices are going to go up. And some of that's related to this egg prices and stuff. And the media is pounding this. And they can change consumer confidence. And those are some of the numbers that move down. Not for economic reasons. And I think the media is really at work. Because, truthfully, the public just doesn't really understand all of tariffs. The main goal of tariffs is to raise the price of imports. So that we export more, and if we export more, we're going to put more factories in the U.S., more machinery and capital in the hands of American workers. And when you put more capital in the hands of American workers, like we did 100 years ago, we were the envy of the world, right? We were the manufacturing capital of the world, and we were richer then. We're richer today, but we were richer then in terms of having a stronger economy, not just the stock market.
Dave,
and so in my view, you're giving good counsel, but the media is really driving negativity.
Well, they are. And I will say this. I think the administration, you made a very interesting observation here, and it's true. Most Americans are not getting their news from Fox. They're just not. I mean, conservatives are.
Yep.
I get that. So here's the problem. They're literally using Fox right now as their state media. And they're not even going on, some of the other conservative networks as much as they are Fox. And I think they need to get that message out, and they need to go anywhere they can to do that. And even if it is ABC or CBS or NBC, I mean, we've got to get the messaging out there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's like you said, your basic premise was right. There's going to be a little pain now, But what the left cannot answer is, why did we lose manufacturing?
Yes, that's right.
What caused the divergence between productivity, which has gone up, but wage rates for the middle class have gone down?
And by the way,
what caused that? And it's because we're not making stuff anymore. And we just let the left say rising prices. Well, you better solve this problem, because we've had, 40 years of terrible economic performance.
I want to go back to 1982. I was in junior high. This is Ronald Reagan during a radio address that he gave at the time, and he weighed in on the tariff issue. Let's take a listen.
Our peaceful trading partners are not our enemies. They are our allies. We should beware of the demagogues who are ready to declare a trade war against our friends, weakening our economy, our national security, and the entire free world, all while cynically waving the American flag. The expansion of the international economy is not a foreign invasion. It is an American triumph, one we worked hard to achieve, and something central to our vision of a peaceful and prosperous world of freedom. After the Second World War, America led the way to dismantle trade barriers and create a world trading system that set the stage for decades of unparalleled economic growth. Yes, back in 1776, our founding fathers believed that free trade was worth fighting for, and we can celebrate their victory, because today, trade is at the core of the alliance that secure the peace and guarantee our freedom. It is the source of our prosperity and the path to an even brighter future for America. Until next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
Well, God bless you, Gipper. Here we have Ronald Reagan and Jamie Dimon over at J.P. Morgan Chase. They've been sharing this with a lot of folks.
No.
What's your take on what Reagan said?
Yeah, Jamie is so way too smart for this kind of argument, right? What Jamie is missing is that Ronald Reagan said that while he was taking on the commies, tore down the wall and brought 15, 16 countries to freedom and free trade. I'm a total free trader if you can have free trade. But then Clinton, et cetera, brought China into the global trading network. And it ask your Cato libertarian friends if you can do free trade with a communist totalitarian surveillance state. Right? Free trade means you have free markets. A communist system, we don't even allow communist data in our economic databases because they don't use the price system. Right? What I just said there, it's very important. They don't use a price system, so prices over there don't have any meaning. So you can't study how prices move in a communist system. And yet they're our largest trading partner. They declared war on us back in 1999 in a pamphlet called Unrestricted Warfare. If people have not read that, it's required reading. And so that's the new thing. Reagan was, of course, saying, yeah, we want free trade with our friends. But it turns out our friends have been double and triple taxing us with tariffs. And we've been the good guy paying all the taxes, supporting all the wars. Our CIA and State Department, our people are just finding out, have done 50 or 60 coup d'etats the average American is just finding out about. And so Jamie Dimon is way too smart to put out that kind of baloney.
Mm. All right, Dave Brandt, we're going to have to leave it there. It's fascinating stuff, and I want to get you back very soon so we can do a deep dive into the tariffs. It just seems to me, I'm going to give you 60 seconds here. It seems to me, if, for example, Canada is going to, slap us with a 35% tariff, then we ought to be doing the same thing.
Yeah. I made the horrible mistake of calling that the golden rule the other day, and a couple of the Christian Pharisees really came after me. And so I wasn't doing biblical exegesis, but yes, at the geopolitical level, if they're whacking you, you got to whack them back. And then the goal is to get to good times so we all grow faster.
That's it. All right. Dave Brandt and the golden rule. I love it.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Good. Thanks, Todd. You bet.
All right. Dave Brandt, great Liberty University. I'm telling you, send your kids to Liberty. They're going to get a great education. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. Here's the deal. We've got Cindy in Bowling Green, Kentucky, Doug in Georgia. Hang tight, guys. We're going to get to your calls. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Now, we have been raising money this month for our friends at Food for the Poor. And just a quick reminder, really, about about this campaign, and we need your help. Food for the Poor doesn't receive a single penny from the government. They never have. They simply exist because of the charity of good-hearted Christian people around this country. And their mission is very simple. They feed poor people, and especially poor children. We are nearing the end of week two of my campaign, and it's really been amazing to see your generosity already helping these little boys and little girls and kids that you probably will never meet. But still, hundreds of you have literally become the hands and the feet of Jesus by stepping up and making these gifts, large gifts and small gifts. And every single dollar is helping. You and I have become a part of something really big that will soon be feeding thousands of hungry boys and girls. And I want you to take a moment to make a gift. And you can do it several ways. A $100 gift feeds one child in El Salvador for an entire year. $200, you're going to bless two children for the next year. Go to ToddStarnes.com. There's a banner at the top of my homepage that reads Feed Their Future. And if you click on it, you're going to see how easy it is to join my life-saving campaign. You can also text the word Todd to 51555, and we'll send you a link to join the campaign. You can also give them a call, 855-353-4673. That's 855-353-4673. And on this Thursday, ladies and gentlemen, all I can say is thank you. Thank you for your support of Food for the Poor. All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Let's go to the phone lines here. Let's head to Don in South Carolina, Fairplay, South Carolina. Hi, Don, what's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to comment on the physical requirements. I'm retired from NYPD and the Navy. In the Navy, you had to tread water for 5 minutes, or they had these 10-foot poles, and they push you back into the pool because you're going to have to swim in the Navy. They won't take you. And in the police department, you had to run a mile in NYPD in a certain period of time. Otherwise, you can't walk after perpetrators.
Yeah, I hope, you know, we had Earl call in from Memphis, Tennessee, a member of law enforcement, and I think he misunderstood what we were saying. We weren't saying all cops were overweight. Our question was, should police officers be physically fit? And Don, I'm asking you, I mean, should they be physically fit? Should they be able to run after a suspect and capture that suspect?
Yeah, you had a fat requirement. And you'd go to the medical section, and they'd put a tape measure around you. And if you exceeded this fat requirement, you would have to go to, this is an active police department, you'd have to go to overweight training. And I know a couple of detectives that had to lose weight or they were going to lose the job.
Wow, that's fascinating. Well, I'm glad to hear that because, again, I just feel like if you're going to be protecting people, you got to be able to chase after the bad guys.
Yeah, well, listen, if you have most cops wear combat boots, and if you're jumping over fences, running it around, how are you going to do it? You're not wearing sneakers. You have to be physically fit, and you'll have a heart attack. I know one cop that went into cardiac arrest. You know, imagine in the inner city, you're running over fences, you're running in backyards, you're out, man. Your battery is dead.
Well, not to mention the amount of equipment as well, and that weighs a lot, too, so you're absolutely right about that. Hey, Don, we're coming up on a hard break here. I appreciate you calling in. Folks, I see you. Hang tight. We are going right to your calls, but we do have to take a quick break for the top of the hour news. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to be giving a shout-out to all of you folks who have been donating in our Food for the Poor campaign. Go check it out right now, ToddStarnes.com. Click on that blue banner at the very top of the page, and you'll be able to help us out feed some kids. All right, folks, hour three of the big show coming up. We'll be right back.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love
American Ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. An honor to have you guys with us today. By the way, we have got a jam-packed show tonight on Newsmax. Going to be a lot of fun, and hope you join us. We're going to be talking to our friends over at Newsbusters. Also, Bill Abbott from Great American Media. They run things like the Hallmark Channel, among others. We're going to be talking to him, as well as Alliance Defending Freedom. And we're going to be talking about this crazy story involving the University of Buffalo and Young Americans for Freedom, YAF. So that's going to be a very interesting conversation, conservatives under attack on our university campuses. So be sure to be watching Newsmax later tonight. All right, before we jump into the big news of the day, we're going to be checking with Mary Margaret Olihan from the White House in just a few moments. I want to go back to the phone lines, though, because we had a couple of callers that we're not able to squeeze in. Let's go to Bowling Green, Kentucky, and Cindy joins us and wanted to weigh in on the physical fitness requirements from the military. Hi, Cindy. What's going on?
Oh, not much. How you doing, Todd?
I'm well. Thank you for asking.
It's good to talk to you. I'm a first-time caller, so I thought that this was a good thing for me to call in about because I do know a little bit about it.
So I understand that you are a Marine. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I am. I served 7 years in the Marine Corps active duty. I also served in Desert Storm. And when they're talking about how everything changed, when they changed the requirements of what you had to pass as far as your physical fitness, they actually, you need to be able to do a lot more than what they're requiring. One of the things that you have to be able to do, and what I did in Desert Storm, is we had to carry around, as women, 70 pounds of gear on our bodies at all times. Even if it was just to get up and go to the bathroom. You couldn't go without your rifle and your gas mask. So there's a lot of stuff that you have to carry, and you have to be able to do this. And now that women are going into male roles, they should have to be able to do everything that a man can physically. So they have to be able to run just as well as a man and do other things just as well as a man physically in order to do those jobs effectively. In a war, especially.
So, Cindy, did that make sense to you, though, or were you one of those people who said, well, there ought to be different standards for the women as opposed to the men?
I was the person who said it should be the same. Now, when I went in 85, and the women only had to run a mile and a half, and the men had to run 3 miles for our PFT test. However, when we ran with the men, so I never ran under 3 miles. I would go anywhere from 3 miles to up to 8 miles. So I had to be able to do that. And the test only required me to do a mile and a half. So I used to joke around about how easy it was on days of PFT because I only had to do a mile and a half. And the requirements of what a woman has to do, especially in branches like like the Marine Corps and the Army, they need to understand that women have to be able to physically do what a man can do. That's why, even when it comes to women in combat, I have my own feelings about that because I did serve in an area where I was in a situation like that. And it's not just a matter of women being strong enough to be able to do things. It's a matter of men and women being together and in jobs where you're by yourself and you're outnumbered by many men, so it's very hard to deal with men at those times because there's a lot of military sexual trauma in the now, especially bad, really bad now.
Well, Cindy, we sure do appreciate you serving our great nation, and what you're saying makes a heck of a lot of sense as well, and you did a great job as a first-time caller.
Oh, thank you.
All right, give us a holler back, and we really appreciate all of our great listeners there in the Bowling Green area. All right, 901-260-5926. Let's go to Jerry in North Carolina. Hi, Jerry. What's on your mind?
Hi, Todd. Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
I have a perfect analogy that I'm going to be sending in to the president regarding the remarks that are being made, the negative remarks that are being made now about the way he's trying to get our economy back on track. When he took over, he basically inherited like a dislocated shoulder. Everybody was hurting. Now he's trying to fix it. Well, when you have a dislocated shoulder, what do? You have to give it a good hard twist, which is painful as hell for a short period, and then all of a sudden, everything is fine. So I think it's a pretty good analogy that he should use, and maybe it'll wake up these people to realize that things just don't happen overnight. You got to give it a little bit of time.
Yeah, I'm with you. And again, it's everybody's wanting things immediately, and that's just a complete misunderstanding of what's happening and how long it takes to undo all of this damage. But look, for example, you heard President Trump say yesterday the price for a barrel of oil is coming down. That means gas prices are going to be coming down. When gas prices come down, that means prices at the supermarket are going to be coming down. But it doesn't happen all at once, does it, Jerry?
That's right. Exactly right. People have to realize that this is not a black and white thing. That, you know, you take the pain for a little while for the betterment of a better future.
Yep, that's it. Jerry, we're going to leave it there. I've got to take a quick break here, but we certainly appreciate you calling in, and thank you for listening to the show. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. This is the Todd Stearns Show. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Let's go to the phone lines here. Lee in Bartlett, Tennessee, listening to us on KWAM. Hey, Lee, what's going on?
Hey, Todd. I was going to tell you about some of the requirements. See, when I was in the Navy, it's just the opposite of the lady who called you. It was in the Marines, and I was in there in 1991 for 4 years. Anyhow, once you're out of boot camp, there is no more physical training at all. They have once a year, what they call a nationwide or worldwide stand down, where generally about the same time everybody gets in a large group and does maybe 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it was of PT, and it's observed by one guy. So you got hundreds of guys out there on this field, and when he ain't looking, they're cheating. You know what I'm saying? So there is no PT after boot camp. And then, like, some of the people, like the cooks especially, are really huge. So, I mean, it is totally the opposite of what that lady was describing in the Marines.
Wow. So is that right? So, I mean, how does that, did that work out? I mean, did everybody pretty much stay physically fit even though there were no requirements?
No. I mean, you had people that, you know, that probably did it before they went in and went to the gym consistently on their own, and are just average-sized people, but you had people that didn't take care of themselves. And, you know, something that sticks out of my mind is especially the cooks, per se, you know, they're bigger than Santa Claus, you know. So I mean, there's some really, really out-of-shape people, at least in that branch, you know, because it's up to you to take care of yourself after boot camp, kind of like the police. Same idea as the police is.
That's really, you know, that again, that is fascinating. And you would just assume that you guys in the military, when you're not, you know, when you're not fighting a war, you're back on base and you're doing calisthenics and running 5 miles a day and doing all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you see, on my ship, we had Marines on it, so that's all they did all day long when we were at sea, was push-ups and stuff like that. And we considered the Navy like a regular job. You know, you had engine men and so forth, cooks and electricians. You know, you didn't have any of that, just nothing but PT. And it got to the point where, during chow time, they would get in line first, and we'd be pissed off. So eventually, they made one Marine, one sailor, because all they did all day long was PT. But, you know, we had a regular job.
Sure, sure. Let me ask you, what do you think about the Secretary of Defense and his decision to focus on physical fitness?
I think you should. I mean, even with the police, I mean, it's ridiculous when you see some of these people. I think, like, what is this guy? He's not going to be able to get nobody, you know, in a chase or whatever the case may be. And same for the military. You got to be physically fit. You just have to be. You ain't got to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. But, you know, I'm all for him cracking down on that.
I hear you. Lee, I'm with you 1,000% there, and you're right. You don't have to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, but you do need to be physically fit. All right, Lee, going to leave it there. Thank you for calling in. 901-260-5926 is our number. So just a few moments ago on CNN, you literally have people justifying the attacks on Tesla dealerships and Tesla owners around the country. Take a listen.
Like if you know, are attacking Teslas or dealerships, going beyond vandalism, that could be an act of domestic terrorism. But I do want to ask about this as resistance. Is this what resistance should look like?
So Trump thinks that if you try to kill cops to overthrow the government and change an election, that's not domestic terrorism, but somehow having a protest in front of a Tesla dealership is. The bottom line with Trump is freedom and liberties belong to people who agree with him, and that's it. That's his view of America. That's not a view that people who believe in our Constitution share.
They're just expressing their anger and frustration. Remember that when they start marching through your neighborhoods, burning down your homes, ladies and gentlemen. So look, coming up Friday, this is going to be a big deal. The government shutdown. Chucky Schumer says that they're not going to allow the vote to happen. They're not going to allow the cloture vote. And that means the government will shut down at midnight on Friday. Understand, contrary to what you may hear in the media, this is all on the Democrats. And by the way, this is not the first time this has happened. You're going to be listening to some audio here of Chuck Schumer admitting that he set up Trump to own the government shutdown. Cut number 12, please.
We sort of set him up instinctively. We didn't plan this. Everyone thought we planned it out. It was about the government shutdown the first time. And Nancy said something to him about, he didn't understand, about women. So,
what? Chuck was masterful.
Well,
he was masterful.
She set him up so I could go in for the kill.
No, but he was masterful. He's talking to him about the government shutdown and about immigrants and the rest. And he says, I'll take ownership of the shutdown.
Said, so, Mr. President, will you own the shutdown? Yes, I will.
There you go. That's Chucky Schumer. Here's President Trump. And by the way, it's fascinating that, you know, again, Chuck Schumer, Jewish, and yet he's supporting the Palestinians and Hamas, the very people that want to blow him up. Cut number 10.
And Schumer is a Palestinian, as far as I'm concerned. You know, he's become a Palestinian. He used to be Jewish. He's not Jewish anymore. He's a Palestinian.
Well, I just don't understand this. And it's just like I don't understand the LGBT crowd. You know, they're out there standing in solidarity with the Muslims over there in Gaza. And these are the same people throwing gay people off of buildings in the Middle East. It makes absolutely no sense to me. None whatsoever. Now, earlier on in the program, we were honored to have a Congressman Self joining us, Keith Self from Texas. And he's been making headlines because he was accused of misgendering Mr. Sarah McBride. And this was a conversation that Tommy Lahren had from over at Fox. She had a guest on her podcast. And they were talking about whether it's inappropriate, whether it's rude to misgender a transgender person. Cut number 9, please.
There is a representative who is transgender. Sarah McBride was purposely referred to as Mr., and it's getting a lot of traction. I feel like it's mean-spirited to do it just to be mean. Now, that doesn't mean that I want transgender people in women's sports or women's spaces, because that has an actual physical, tangible impact.
Like, I'm still learning the characters in politics right now. I'm like, oh, it does look like a girl. So, you know, obviously there's been a transition made. It's a lot different than when someone's at a cafe and it's a guy with a beard and a mustache and clearly a man, but then has a skirt on and lipstick, and you're like, want to be called a girl. It's like, that is very difficult to understand. And this is reaching. This is attention. This is reaching. This isn't fair. But I think it's inappropriate. I think, look, this is clearly looks like a woman. And it was done twice.
And it probably would have been done 3 times. By the way, does Tommy Lahren have a problem with the fact that Mr. McBride misgendered Congressman Self, calling him a madam? Does Tommy Lahren have a problem with that as well? So Tommy Lahren over at Fox, and by the way, Fox News, they have bought into the whole transgender movement. So they use the preferred pronouns the whole nine yards. And Tommy Lahren says, look, I'm reading her her tweet here. Look, I don't want biological men in women's sports, but I don't think it's appropriate to purposely be mean to somebody and misgender them just for the sake of it. You can't have it both ways. You're either going to, you either believe that this person is a man or a woman. And if the person is a man, why would you use female pronouns? Why would you do that? But I'm curious, ladies and gentlemen, because Fox News is clearly on the other side of this issue than I am. And I'm it's very clear to me that if you are a man, you were born a man, then why would I call you miss or ma'am or lady? Tommy Lahren and Fox News, on the other hand, believe that's just being rude. Is it rude to misgender a transgender person? 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. 901-260-5926. Coming up a little bit later on this evening on Newsmax, we've got a great show for you. And if you haven't been watching Newsmax, you just don't know what you are missing. Rob Schmidt beating CNN in key ratings. Millions of people are now watching Fox or watching Newsmax. It's really incredible. Every night, Rob Schmidt is on Newsmax revealing the truth about Elon's Doge. So tune in tonight at 7 o'clock and find out why Rob is the hottest personality in cable news. Even President Trump is watching. He says Newsmax is terrific. Reuters reports that Newsmax is now one of the top news brands in America, and you got to find out why. Check out Newsmax on your cable system. Get Rob, Greta, Rob Finnerty, so many more personalities, including yours truly. You can download the free Newsmax app on your smartphone or home TV to start watching. It takes just seconds. With Newsmax Plus, you can watch our great shows anytime. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com to start your free trial. That's NewsmaxPlus.com. Make the switch to Newsmax today. All right, hang tight, folks. When we come back, we're going to be talking to our friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. They're representing a group of conservative kids at the University of Buffalo. This is an unbelievable story. Conservative kids once again coming under attack on their university campus. We're going to tell you all about it. Also, we're going to bring you up to speed on the protest inside Trump Tower in New York City. Seems to me they ought to arrest and deport everybody in that building. All right, hang tight, folks. Got to take a quick break here. Our number, 901-260-5926. Do you think it is rude to misgender a transgender person? We'll be right back. To the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Good to have you with us. So let's talk about what's happening at the University of Buffalo. Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys are representing the Young Americans for Freedom chapter, two students there, filing a lawsuit. And I want to go to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and say hello to Travis Barham, who is with the ADF. And Travis, always good to have you guys on the show. So what's going on here? What's been happening? What are they doing to the conservative kids?
Sure. Thanks for having us on today. Young Americans for Freedom has existed at the University of Buffalo for many, many years. But in 2023, they invited Michael Knowles to come speak on gender identity issues. That talk created a little bit of controversy, as one might expect. And after that, student government decided to adopt some new policies. And the policies directly targeted Young Americans for Freedom and said that any that's within certain categories, if you maintained a relationship with an outside organization, a national organization, then you would be derecognized and essentially kicked off campus. Well, Young Americans for Freedom refused to
terminate its relationship with national organizations, and so it was automatically derecognized. We then filed suit on behalf of the group because it's been clearly established that it's unconstitutional for universities to derecognize a student group simply because of its affiliation for decades. So after that, the student government decided to try to repeal that policy and instead accomplish the same goal through another policy. And this one's almost even more ludicrous because it requires any group that gets recognized to become part of, to merge with the student government and become an arm of the student government in order to function on campus. And so we, you know, we're challenging that policy as well because universities and student governments shouldn't be able to pick and choose which student groups are allowed on campus.
So they derecognized the group. You guys have filed this lawsuit. Is this something that's happening on other campuses, or is this something unique to the University of Buffalo?
We have been representing student groups for decades who have had their free association and free speech rights violated by public universities and student governments. This policy is a little unique, though, in that it requires student groups to merge with and become part of the student government, become essentially an arm of the student government. That's something we haven't seen in many other places. It's a particularly egregious violation of the First Amendment, and that's why we're asking the Second Circuit to step in and address the situation and provide our clients relief.
All right. Travis Barham with Alliance Defending Freedom on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Young America's Foundation, I mean, they've been around for a very long time, very well-respected organization. Again, I'm just having trouble understanding why the University of Buffalo would have a problem with these kids.
Well, the universities should be encouraging students to start intellectually diverse groups on campus like Young Americans for Freedom and not shutting them down. And so when what appears to be going on here is the student government simply trying to micromanage the perspectives that can be expressed on campus, and that's a fundamental violation of the First Amendment. The policy violates the First Amendment, and it effectively muzzles students by preventing them from gathering around their shared beliefs and expressing those on campus.
All right. Well, Travis, we're going to be following this case, and we wish you guys the very best as it makes its way through the court system. Seems like a no-brainer to me, but you guys, I'm sure, are doing a terrific job, and we certainly appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
All right. Travis Barham, ladies and gentlemen, with Alliance Defending Freedom. Unbelievable. But they always go after the conservative kids, and the conservative kids aren't the ones that are occupying student buildings. They're not harassing the Jewish students. They're not burning things down. They're just practicing their First Amendment rights, and apparently that is just unacceptable on many university campuses. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Speaking of that, there's another case involving a Young America's Foundation student. Her name is Zoe Johnson. She's a student at the University of Colorado Boulder. And she got in trouble in her choir class. She was she was a member of a singing ensemble at the University of Colorado. And one day she showed up ready to learn how to, I guess, sing her part. And instead, the kids got an LGBT history lesson. And she didn't understand why. And she raised an issue, and that's a big problem, especially in the choral setting. She apparently also offended another student when she asked the student the student was wearing something on his head. And she said, "What is that? What is that head covering you're wearing?" And he said, "That's a do-rag." And she said, "What is a do-rag?" And the student filed a complaint. You can't make this up. She didn't know what a do-rag was. And I got to be honest with you. I'm not quite sure I know what a do-rag is. I'm not going to ask that. I don't want to put anybody on the spot on the team here, but I just don't know what a do-rag is. I don't think there's anything wrong with that one way or the other. It was just curiosity. So if I was sitting across from somebody, I'm like, I'm just curious. What's that do-rag for? That wouldn't make me a bad person, would it? Anyway, the choir director at the University of Colorado Boulder took issue with Zoe and said that she was having problems understanding the concept of white privilege. Oh, of course she was. So the problem is that she was a white person asking a minority person about the do-rag. Zoe responded by saying, look, I really don't care about identity. I really care more about what you have to say as a person, which is what any normal individual would say. So Zoe has now filed a federal lawsuit, and she is alleging that the university has violated her constitutional rights, which they have. May I just say to Zoe, if she happens to be listening, Zoe, run as fast as you can away from the University of Colorado Boulder. It is a lost cause. It is just a lost cause. My recommendation, Liberty University, you're going to get an incredible, solid education there. I have no doubt about that. 901-260-5926. This story from NPR. NPR facing the wrath of its woke employees, as well as a bunch of Alphabet activists. There's a longtime news anchor at NPR by the name of Ari Shapiro. Mr. Shapiro had been invited to some sort of a corporate LGBTQ pride event. And so he did what any anchor would do. He sent the invitation to the network's managing editor and said, may I attend? And the managing editor fired back an email saying, you know, I don't think it's a good idea. You should probably just decline the invitation. Well, the problem is that this email was inadvertently sent to the rest of the staff. And now all you know what is broken loose. Big kerfuffle at NPR, National Public Welfare Radio. And many of the people at NPR are now accusing the network of trying to curry favor with President Trump. You know, the Republicans are trying to completely defund NPR, and NPR is trying to downplay a lot of this, saying, you know what, let's just be quiet a little bit, and maybe we can send Trump a tote bag. Maybe we can be a little nicer so we don't lose all of our funding. What I find interesting about this whole argument, NPR is out there saying, well, it's only a few million dollars. It's not like we really need it. Oh, they need it. They need that money. Now, others are suggesting that the network might be backing away from a key constituency. And you say, what is that constituency? It is the L, the G, the B, the T, and the Q constituency. And I sincerely doubt that's happening. I think somebody just goofed. Because Shapiro apparently had been invited to speak at this thing over and over and over again. So it's not the first time he's ever gone. Anyway, long story short, now that it's all come out, NPR has reversed course. And they're going to let Shapiro go to this gay pride event. Look, here's the deal. NPR, they've got every right to decide what sort of events their anchors can or cannot attend. And I have firsthand knowledge. And Dieter, I'm going to be very, very careful about this. I have firsthand knowledge of a well-known conservative cable news channel, I am not naming names, that banned a prominent news anchor from speaking at a Christian homeschool conference. And this person was just stunned. But they didn't want the anchor at this particular TV channel to appear at a Christian homeschool conference. And you know what? The network's got every right to do it. If they sign your paycheck, they've got a right to tell you where you can and where you cannot speak. It's in the contract. You got to abide by the contract. So the broader issue for me here is why we are still being forced to fund NPR. Why have we not defunded NPR yet? That's what I want to know. What are we waiting on? Why have we not defunded PBS? And again, I keep coming back to this one central argument. I own a commercial radio station. I should not have to be funding NPR, my competition across town. Why should I have to do that? I've always wondered. All right, 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Folks, got to take a break. In the meantime, head over to ToddStearns.com. Click on that blue banner. Let's feed some hungry kids today. All right, welcome back, everybody. You know, I have been really impressed with Secretary of State Marco Rubio and his handling of Mahmoud Khalil. He is the Columbia University grad student who has been leading a lot of these anti-Israel, anti-Jewish protests there in New York City. And Rubio is pretty clear about all of this. Cut number three, please.
When you come to the United States as a visitor, which is what a visa is, which is how this individual entered this country, on a visitor's visa, okay, you are here as a visitor. We can deny you that visa. We can deny you that if you tell us when you apply, hi, I'm trying to get into the United States on a student visa. I am a big supporter of Hamas, a murderous, barbaric group that kidnaps children, that rapes teenage girls, that takes hostages, that allows them to die in captivity, that returns more bodies than live hostages. If you tell us that you are in favor of a group like this, and if you tell us when you apply for your visa, and by the way, I intend to come to your country as a student, and rile up all kinds of anti-Jewish student, anti-Semitic activities. I intend to shut down your universities. If you told us all these things when you applied for a visa, we would deny your visa. I hope we would. If you actually end up doing that, once you're in this country on such a visa, we will revoke it. And if you end up having a green card, not citizenship, but a green card as a result of that visa while you're here in those activities, we're going to kick you out.
Well, again... That's the proper response. We are under no obligation, according to the United States Constitution, of accepting anybody into this country to study at our schools, to work in our factories, who hates our country and wants to destroy it. Why would we want those people to come into this country? Why would we want them to try and recruit others to hate America, to become domestic terrorists? So I think it was the right call to make here. As a matter of fact, so does Senator Tommy Tuberville from Alabama, the great senator, cut number eight.
But when it comes to protesters, we got to make sure we treat all of them the same. Mm-hmm. Send them to jail. Free speech is great, but free speech is not what we need in these universities, and they don't need to be doing things that they're preaching from Hamas.
It's true. They don't. Matter of fact, Fox News made a stunning announcement about what's really going on at Columbia, which happens to be an Ivy League school. Check this out. Cut 11.
Over half of Columbia's enrollment is foreign students, and they're the ones, of course, who pay full tuition. Yeah. And so of the general studies student population. And that raises two questions. One, why is the American taxpayer, the Free Press reported that, you know, $400 million in federal grants have been yanked. Why are American taxpayers paying to educate people who aren't Americans? And two, it raises this question about immigration and which way the cultural exchange is going.
Mm. I have a question. $400 million. $400 million. That's how much money they're getting in grants. That's just grant money. $400 million of your tax money. So you're out there working at an office, an insurance company. Maybe you're working in a factory somewhere, and you're busting your butt every single day. Your tax money is going to educate foreign students, many of whom, by the way, literally hate this country and want to destroy Western civilization. Mahmoud Khalil actually wants to destroy Western civilization. That's the end goal here, folks. And the globalists, they're the ones to blame for all of this. They wanted to open up all the borders. They wanted to have this one world society. What they did not count on was this notion that the Islamic faith tradition is not finished yet with conquering nations and conquering religions. Look at what's happening right now in Syria, where Abbas was overthrown. He was kicked out of the country. All of that started under Barack Hussein Obama's administration when he completely destabilized the Middle East and specifically Syria. And yes, Assad was a brutal dictator, but at least he protected Christians. And at least he was on the side of America. He was a pseudo ally in the region. And that's as good as you're going to get in some of these cases. But now Syria is about to become a hotbed of Islamic radical terrorism. They are killing Christians by the hundreds, and soon it will be the thousands. We've seen this over and over again. This is nothing new, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what Trump is trying to prevent. That's what Trump is trying to stop. Keep in mind that the Biden administration, and we saw this information a couple of days ago, where the Biden administration knowingly allowed thousands of very dangerous Islamic radicals to breach our borders and to come into the United States of America. Where are those people right now? Well, that's what Border Czar Tom Homan is doing at this very moment. He's hunting down these people. He's getting pushback from Democrat governors in New York State, for example. It seems to me it's a no-brainer that you would want ICE agents to come in and root out these very dangerous people that have destroyed your cities. It seems to me that you would want that to happen. But the Democrats, this is the hill that they're going to die on, and they're going to die on that hill. Because by and large, the American people have stood up and said, you know what, we're not going down this path anymore. And that's including a lot of people who in previous years voted Democrat. So I wish the Democrats all the luck in the world. You keep working out of that playbook. I'm telling you, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Don't forget, folks, we have got a great show lined up for you tonight, 5 o'clock Eastern on Newsmax. Also, just one final reminder, head over to my website right now, toddstearns.com. We are helping a very important Christian ministry. They don't get a single penny of government money. It's all about Christians helping poor people, and that's what we're doing. We're trying to feed children, boys and girls, going to bed hungry. We want to make sure that never happens again, and that's why we're raising money for our friends at Food for the Poor. Again, you can go to my website, click on the blue banner at the very top of the page, toddstearns.com, or you can also text Todd to 51555 or give them a call at 855-353-4673. That number again, 855-353-4673. Got to scoot out of here, everybody. Been a great day. Government shutdown coming. You be good, America.